Chapter 25. Ariane was no fool. She kept a good eye on Philippa and Davin as they conversed, and Baron Carver had reacted strongly to whatever the Queen had to say, his incensed emotion visible from a distance. As she and Baron Carver left the Queen and the Sheriff behind, he strode forward energetically, jaw set and eyes distant, as if looking ahead to somewhere he had to go. He led Cyril by the reins with his right hand, and she had commandeered his left, much to the surprise of one Lord High Sheriff. Everyone, she realized, thought she hated Davin. It gave her a perverse pleasure to disappoint their assumptions. "Could you walk a little more slowly for a lady?" she asked. He returned his focus to her, and his face softened. "I am sorry, Lady Hightower. I'm a bit preoccupied. I must away as soon as possible. There isn't a moment to lose."
"You will keep your promise to me, won't you, Lord Carver?"
He stopped and released Cyril's reins, taking her hands in his. "At the first opportunity, I swear it. But now I must fly. I thank you, Lady Hightower, for your kindness. Please keep safe and give my best to Saunders and your sister." Her heart pounded. Something about the worry and determination in Davin's voice bespoke dangers ahead. He had already been through so much. Gently she pushed forward and wrapped her arms around him, and he wrapped her in his.
"Don't do anything stupid, Davin," she said. "Come to me at Hightower."
She felt those unbidden tears rising again, and she released him, turning away and fleeing inside before she could see his sympathetic face and say more than she intended. Ariane returned to her apartments, heart brimming with feeling. Her life had rolled along on such a steady track since her husband's death. Her contentment had continued unabated until the Earl of Longford had pressed his attentions upon her, forcing her to worry about losing her independence. Eutychus was handsome, affable, and a gentleman from a powerful family, but all of his charms had failed to persuade her to surrender her unmarried state. Now that Davin Carver had entered her life, her satisfaction in her own independence seemed a feather in a turbulent wind of emotion. Such ridiculous romantic feelings. Often she had internally chastised some of her peers for their irrational flights of fancy as they swooned and simpered over this man or that, proclaiming undying devotions that always met swift demises when the next handsome pair of trousers waltzed into the room. But now here she was, flushed with hope and desire. It was as if someone had rung a great bell in her heart, waking her and announcing that indeed love was not a fluke, an imaginative delusion, or just a label given to make a good match appear to better advantage. Love was within her grasp. She wanted to control it, stifle it. She wanted to be the master of her feelings. But Davin Carver had brought water into the dried garden of her affections, and everything was blooming and bursting over walls and fences, bounding out of beds and gardens with such startling fecundity that the restrictive gardener within her could only look on helplessly. Surely it wasn't prudent to love someone so early into an acquaintance. Was she deluding herself? Had she turned into one of the silly ladies of which the Bittermarchian court had no short supply? And what would everyone think of a woman who loved the man who had killed her husband? In the midst of these reflections, the Queen sent a servant to fetch her into the drawing room where they often met. Ariane tried to collect herself. She wanted to be in control when she met the Queen, but as soon as she crossed the threshold of the drawing room, Philippa threw her a particularly knowing grin that prompted a giddy smile in return.
"Good morning, my Queen,"
Ariane said, genuflecting with stiff formality. If she couldn't stifle the sunshine in her heart, she could at least try to cloud it over on her face.
"Good morning to you, dear. Please sit."
The Queen waved everyone else out of the room, while Ariane situated herself on her customary chair.
"Before we get to more pleasant matters," the Queen said, "I have been asked by Duke Longford to put in a good word to you on behalf of Eutychus Longford, who cannot help but be distressed by your apparent coldness to him of late. I don't quite have the heart to tell the Duke or his son that if things seem cold, it is because the fire has moved off to warm someone else."
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean," Ariane replied evasively. The Queen laughed.
"I see. Well, listen for a bit then. I don't doubt that at some point during our conversations you may have come to understand that I regard Lord Davin Carver a vast deal. Though perhaps not so much the case now, I am sure that at one time you might have wondered what it is about him that I admire so. I wish to explain it to you, if you wouldn't mind, because I think it important that you understand. Will you hear me?" Of course, Your Grace, Ariane answered, surprised by the serious tone. I have lived longer than I should, as the House of Lords would no doubt agree. I have read much and seen much. Have you ever wondered why there is such a thing as a noble class and a common class? In our history, noble families evolved, and quickly, based on those who married into Joris Pulsifer's line. People naturally admired him for his connection to the Eternal Flame, and those who intertwined their lives with his and those of his family partook of that admiration by association. But that was not all. The early days after exile from Cretus were hard and dangerous, and there were those who rose up, who led and protected their fellow refugees. They possessed elevated qualities people could sense and feel, so much so that they placed their trust upon them, and with that trust came privilege. With privilege, unfortunately, follows indolence, vanity, and pride. The prosperity the nobility enjoys has, I'm afraid, nearly bred out of them those remarkable qualities that once made men and women noble by nature. So much of what we think of as noble now is practiced affectation and pretense. But our Lord Carver is a noble man, not just a nobleman. There are others, to be sure, but I find Davin remarkable in so many ways. He takes no pleasure in power, has no improper pride, is temperate, treats those beneath his station with respect, eschews intrigues and courtly foolishness, and is manly and strong. If our ancestors, who struggled through that dark winter in the mountains, and who fought and scrapped and suffered to survive, could see us now, I think they would be disgusted with the lot of us, and would only find a kindred bitter Marchion in Davin and those like him. What do you think, dear Ariane? Do I see clearly, or am I just an old blind woman rambling on about nonsense?
I agree with your assessment of Davin, Your Grace, she answered, wondering what the Queen's point would be. But surely this disease of pretended nobility is not as widespread as it may seem.
Perhaps not, the Queen answered. But don't forget my gift and what I see when I look at the men and women assembled in my hall. But you are wondering why I tell you this.
Yes.
For all Davin's good qualities, the Queen said, he has a flaw I should desperately like him to overcome, and I need your help in the matter.
I would be glad to help where I can, though I am unsure I have much influence over him.
Don't underestimate yourself, the Queen chided, especially where Davin is concerned. He cares for you a great deal. This I can see.
No amount of concentration could thwart the blush reddening her cheeks, the flow of happiness into her soul. She had not mistaken his regard for her. Ariane cleared her throat.
What flaw do you see that you wish to correct? That he does not feel like he belongs in our circle, the circle of court and politics. He avoids them out of a sense of disgust and, sometimes, I think, a belief in his own inferiority. With you at his side and with a little guidance, I think he might at least tolerate a session at the House of Lords, or perhaps even talk to his fellow nobles at an assembly.
Ariane thought for a moment. So your punishment will be of short duration? The Queen smiled.
I hope so. For your sake and mine.
And why should you care that he participate more at court? The Queen sighed and leaned back, turning her gaze out the window as she spoke.
I want him to lead, Ariane. The court is in desperate need of the voice of one so steady and so uninfected with stupid frippery. For now Lord Carver is content to stand in corners and send ballots through the post. I want his words, his wisdom, and his example to be known to more than just you or me, or his tenants at Frostbourne. You know him quite well by now. Am I delusional?
Davin was unique, Ariane had to admit, but what the Queen was asking would be difficult.
He is a quiet, gentle man, but one of passion as well. To turn him into a public man, yes, could take time. I'm not sure I am equal to the task. I fear that until he is able to escape your disfavour, I may see him very little.
It is not a disfavour, dear Ariane, the Queen said. It is merely a way to transition the man back into society in a way they can understand. I have work for him to do, but I promise you that I will have him back enjoying your warm smile as soon as I can.
Again her heart pounded, and no amount of control could staunch the glow she could feel beaming from her face.
I thank you, Your Grace. I miss him already.
As do I. Be patient some few weeks, my girl.
Now, I do have a request. No, an order to give you. You won't like it.
Ariane frowned.
What is it? I need you out of Belshire immediately. It is for your protection. For the sake of appearances, I need you to accompany Miss Ironhorn back to Frostbourne and help her collect her things. She is to return to her parents' estate.
Ariane fought to keep her composure.
Accompany that beastly tart of a woman? For days? I would rather take my chances in Hightower.
The Queen's face hardened. Ariane knew the look. Philippa the friend had disappeared. Philippa the monarch had taken her place.
You will do this, Ariane. You may not thank me for it now, but it cannot be helped. I need you far from Belshire. This instant. It will appear to everyone that two women, wronged by one Baron Carver, are taking solace together. While you may find such dissembling distasteful, you will just have to trust me when I say it is absolutely necessary.
Was she really in so much danger? She'd rather take the journey with a sabre cat.
As you wish, my queen. Good, Philippa said, her softness returning. It may be nigh on intolerable, but you may just learn a thing or two about Davon that might temper your regard for him. I'm sure Emile will introduce you to another side of Davon Carver you do not know.
Ariane folded her arms. There was only one side of Davon she did not know. The side that had decided to marry Emile Ironhorn.